You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Good morning. In for Bruce St. James, I'm Jeff Munn. Our lead this morning, Southwest Key has responded to threats of being shut down.
The lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford, off the U.S. 60 and Mesa Drive.
Yeah, those threats coming from the Arizona Department of Health Services. They want to pull the health care licenses of Southwest Key. Now, Southwest Key is a company that has some 13 shelters here in the state that house migrant children. We know that the DHS director says that she is astonished at the flippant attitude from the company and their inability to provide the background checks, the fingerprint clearances for staff workers by a certain deadline. Right here in studio with us right now is KTAR senior reporter Jim Cross, who has been following the developments of this story all morning, a story that has been developing for quite some time. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, Pamela, and good morning.
Well, you know, Southwest Key is something that we've talked quite a bit about here on KTAR, but I'm not going to assume that our listeners are all that familiar with it. They have some 13 shelters here in the state. They started to get under a tremendous amount of scrutiny in the wake of the president's zero tolerance policy down on the border. This is where children were being separated from their families, and we needed to put those children somewhere. A lot of those kids came here to Arizona, and there have been several accusations against workers within these facilities of abuse. Most likely, there have been a lot of serious allegations about sexual abuse.
Yeah, two stand out. One was convicted, former worker, was convicted on 7 counts of sexually abusing teenage boys. Another worker was accused of sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl at the center. Again, as you pointed out, this all started after the separation of children from their parents at the border. The children are being held at Southwest Key centers around the state of Arizona, some of them.
Now, in order to work with children, if you are at a facility, whether it be a school that gets funding from the government or whether you're at a facility like this that gets funding from the government, there are certain checks and balances that go into place. I know that you've had educators in your family, Jim. I know that you've had educators in your family, Jeff. I've got educators in my family. All of our family members have had to go through a fingerprint clearance in order to work with kids. And that is what the state is looking at right now. It appears that these shelters, the Southwest Key shelters, missed a very important deadline. Explain that to me, Jim.
That deadline was September 14th, which they've now apologized for in a statement they sent to us about 3 or 4 sentences long. Southwest Key apologized for not getting everything done as far as the backgrounds by the 14th of September, and they have now requested a meeting as soon as possible with the leadership of the Arizona Department of Health Services.
From the sound of it, Jim, there are some things they could probably do in the interim before a meeting. When I heard the response, I thought, what do you need a meeting for? You know what needs to be cleaned up. Clean it up.
Right. And Kara Chris, the director for the state health services, didn't totally take them out with this. She had 30 days to appeal this, which from reading what I just read, I think they have every intention of doing that. So she's at least giving them the opportunity to get things squared away to meet the state requirements and, you know, stay in business on this.
So they may appeal, but what's so astonishing to me about all of this is we as a state and Southwest Key as a facility have both known for an extended period of time that they have not been following the letter of the law in getting their employees background checked, because there was an individual who was arrested pre-zero tolerance policy, who pled guilty to sexually assaulting some children. He was also HIV positive, and it was during that whole investigation that we found out that Southwest Key has been failing to follow proper protocol and background check and finger clearance these people. We're talking about children here. This isn't hard to do. So Southwest Key is given an opportunity to make it right, but I don't know if they should. Do we know what would happen to these kids, Jim, if they lose the appeal or if they don't appeal?
We have been attempting to contact the feds on this and are still waiting to hear back on what the plan would be. Right now, that is completely up in the air as far as we know. We're waiting on a federal response to see what happens with these children. But this has been on the radar, as Pamela mentioned, for
years,
and specifically in the last few months since this came to a head with the border separations. And, you know, the governor back in June addressed this, and you could almost see a blueprint being laid out when he spoke to KTAR, because he said the state is going to take a look at this. The state is going to keep a close eye on this. The key is protecting these children, making sure they're safe. So even back in June, you kind of see, you know, the genesis of this.
We've got some audio from that interview a couple of months ago. This is Governor Doug Ducey. He's not speaking directly to what has happened in the last 24 hours with Southwest Key. This was a couple of months ago, but it is still pertinent to the discussion we're having. Take a listen.
If there is a complaint that happens with a child inside a state facility or a non-federal facility, it's the state's role and responsibility to investigate it.
Do we know how long, Jim, that Southwest Key was given to have all of their employees' background checked before the deadline of September 14th approached? Do you know what period of time that was?
That I'm unclear on.
Okay. So. All right. Because, you know, if they were given a substantial amount of time to cross their T's, dot their I's, and they're showing an absolutely flagrant inability to do so, they don't want to do it. What I'm reading from all of this, it's like, we're giving you a warning. We know this is going on. And they've chosen not to do anything about it.
Right. That's why I say, I don't know what a meeting is necessary for. They've been warned so many times. Well, they know exactly what the problem is.
Yeah, it was pretty clear from the clip Pamela just played there of the governor back in June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
they were
and,
pretty well on top of it.
Right, and
yeah.
We've heard these stories about abuse going on in these shelters. This isn't new. This has been going on. That story's been out there for a couple months.
Well, Southwest Key, again, a facility. They've got 13 shelters here in the state of Arizona. They house migrant children. They've just gotten a letter, I guess you can say, a notice of intent to revoke the licenses of all of their shelters here in the state. They don't just operate in Arizona. I know they operate in Texas as well as a handful of other states. They've got 30 days to either appeal the action to a hearing office or enter settlement talks with the state. KTIR's Jim Cross has been over it all morning and will continue to follow the story for you as we try to figure out what is the next step, what happens with these kids, and how do we protect them? I mean, I don't care what issue you, or what side of the issue you are with immigration. These are children, and we have a responsibility and an obligation to protect them. Thank you so much, Jim.
Sure.
All right. Hey, coming up next. You've probably gotten those scam phone calls from numbers. They look a little similar to your own phone number. Newsflash. It's about to get worse.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Pamela Hughes with Jeff Munn here today. Bruce a little under the weather. Hopefully he's feeling a little bit better. But, you know, we have our cell phones with us everywhere we go nowadays, Jeff. And they've actually replaced the landline for so many people, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but unless you are in my contacts and a name pops up with a phone call, I don't answer it. If it's just a phone number, I don't answer it.
I'm still in that mode, and I guess it's because I'm an old dinosaur about this, that if, no matter who rings, I'm answering.
That might change. That might change next year, and here's why. If we're talking about the number of scam phone calls, telemarketing phone calls that you've received, if you feel as though the rate of which you're getting them is increasing, well, you're not alone. Last year, 2017, the company that, you know, researches all this kind of stuff, they said about 4% of all the phone calls that you receive were scam. 4%. That's not so bad.
Right.
This year, though, it's jumped to about 30%. That's a heck of a jump.
Wow.
And they predict that by early next year, nearly half of cell phone calls will be scams. Half.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. And it's the reason why I don't answer my phone unless you're in my contacts.
Okay, you've convinced me. I'm not answering a phone from a regular number anymore.
Well, here's the other thing. And you may have noticed this. I made an exception recently, a couple months ago, okay? Because it caught me off guard. I mean, these scammers, they're a little tricky here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You know what they did? I looked down at the phone number and just subconsciously, I'm like, I know that phone number. And I answered the call. Why did I know that phone number, Jeff? Well, because it looked a heck of a lot like my phone number. I don't know what they call it, like the prefix, the first three digits of your phone number.
Right.
Like, let's say, you know, your number is 602-851, blah, blah, blah. They will pick up and they will start calling you from the 602-851, and then they'll just change one or two of the last four digits. And you go, that looks like my number.
Right.
You just subconsciously pick it up. They're becoming sneaky Pete's.
Yeah, and that fools me sometimes, because my cell number, they replicate the prefix. And the first two digits of the last four numbers, those first two digits of my phone are the same number, and that comes up the same way.
Telemarketers are using a technique called neighbor spoofing. That's what makes the number look similar to yours. The idea is that, well, if the first few numbers look like your own phone number, you'll answer. You may think it's from a relative,
yeah!
an old friend from your
yeah!
hometown, your kid's school, or a neighbor.
Okay, so yesterday, we're on the air, Bruce and I, right?
Right.
I've got my phone here just like I always do. It's on vibrate. And a phone number pops up. Again, a number. I'm on the air. I'm not going to answer it anyway.
Right.
But then I look down on it and it says it's from Detroit. I don't know anybody in Detroit.
Yeah.
I've never been to Detroit. There's no reason for me to be receiving a phone call from Detroit. All right. Send you right to voicemail, right? And then I see I got a voice message. Well, it's kind of odd sometimes. I mean, not many people leave voice messages anymore, right?
Right.
And after I listened to the voicemail, I played it for Bruce, and I'm like, man, it's been great working with you, because apparently they're after me. Here's the voice message I got yesterday.
You will be taken under custody by the local police, as there are four serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment. We would request you to get back to us so that we can...
You know, four.
I don't know you anymore.
No, I mean, see, I'm like, wait, only four? I was thinking there's at least eight, right? And they're telling me here, you know what? You need to call us back as soon as possible, or the local police will take you into custody. Boy, that's convincing.
Yeah, but, yeah, and I've called them back.
You've called them back?
But here's why.
Why?
Number one, I knew it wasn't true. Because,
so why'd you call them back?
Well, I just wanted to call their bluff. I called him back and I said, so what's the problem? Well, Mr. Munn, and I got a live voice, and he was starting to tell me, no, you really need to, you've got these allegations, you need to do something about this. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what, here, I'll have you, my attorney call you, and if there's nothing to this, my attorney will call you and will also talk to you about something else. And as soon as I said that, click. Look. I knew it was a scam. I just called it because there's a little devil in me that always wants to play around with these things. Think about this for a second.
What's that?
If you are up on charges of any kind, you think you're going to get a phone call?
Right. See, that's the thing. Okay. So I know that they talk about like law enforcement and like the IRS or something that's legal.
Right.
You know, because they know that people are afraid of that. There's fear based in that. And they're going to respond because they want to make sure that everything's cool. Right.
Right.
And I'm not ragging on people that fall for the scams, because I have a friend who is highly educated, who called me a couple months ago, all ticked off. And I'm like, what's going on? And she goes, I just spent the last hour on the phone with scammers, but I didn't know they were scammers. I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, well, I got this phone call, you know, from the IRS saying that I owed money, and it was really scary. And so I called them back, and it took me about an hour on the phone with them before I realized that this was a scam. I'm like, please tell me you did not give them any personal information. She's like, no. Once they started asking for X, Y, and Z, that tipped me off, and
right.
I hung up on them. She goes, but I was scared. So this is a very educated individual who I thought would know these types of things, but it works. And that's why it has gone from 4% of cell phone calls in 2017 were scam calls up to about 30% this year. And they're projecting that nearly half of the phone calls next year will be made by scammers. We want to hear from you on the open mic line. Have you been scammed? Has the number of phone calls from scammers gone through the roof. Jim Cross, we just had our senior reporter Jim Cross in here talking about another story. And during the flash with Bob McClay, he leans over and he goes, my record, 22 in one day.
22?
Jim Cross received 22 telemarketer scam phone calls.
I have never gotten that many.
I'd change my number. That would drive me bananas. Do you have a similar story? Did you fall for it? Did like your spidey senses go off? I'm not here to embarrass anybody. I just want to educate people because, again, close friend of mine didn't quite fall for it, but, you know, at least opened the door for it. 602-200-2733. And can you beat Jim Cross's record of 22 telemarketer calls in one day? I tell you, Jim needs to change that number. Woo, man. All right. This time tomorrow, folks, we will know. We will have an answer, and the speculation will be over as to whether or not the accuser against Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee, whether the woman will in fact testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. A deadline has been set, and so we will know by tomorrow. There are some other fast-moving developments in the story we're going to keep you updated on, and it's coming up next here on KTAR.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Tick tock, tick tock. The deadline is fast approaching. The deadline being that for which Christine Blasey Ford, the woman who was accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault, has a deadline. That deadline is of 7 a.m. Arizona time tomorrow, where she has to notify the Senate Judiciary Committee whether or not she will appear on Monday for a hearing. I've got Jeff Munn in here with me today. And Jeff, it's not just a notification to let the committee know whether or not she will show up. It is also her statement that she has to have drafted and get to the committee again by 7 o'clock. Tomorrow morning.
The clock is ticking. Senator Chuck Grassley, who's the Republican chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has set that Friday deadline, not just for Christine Blasey Ford to agree to testify, but to submit her statement in writing. Grassley says that committee rules, and he's doing this, he says, because the Constitution gives the Senate the exclusive responsibility to advise and consent on nominations, and it's the Senate that will investigate. That's not good enough for Christine Blasey Ford, and right now, there's no sign that anyone is budging.
It appears that that she is attempting, and I'm speaking of Christine Blasey Ford, to try to get the circumstances or the conditions for testifying in as favorable a position as possible, in the sense that she's trying, and you can understand this, she doesn't want to be in the spotlight. She's trying to get maintain or retain as much privacy as possible, I think.
I get it. I totally get it. We need to remind ourselves she didn't want any of this.
Right.
And if you don't know the facts of the story, well, then let me refresh them for you. She wrote a letter to her congresswoman who represents the Palo Alto area. That congresswoman sat down with her for 90 minutes. Christine wanted to remain anonymous, but she was bothered and deeply traumatized by what happened to her at 15 and felt somebody needed to know that this happened by the man you're looking to put on the Supreme Court. These are her words.
Right.
Okay. The congresswoman was so moved by what was said and thought it was credible that she kicked it up to Dianne Feinstein, the senator in California. Now, it's unclear to me whether Dianne Feinstein sat down with Ms. Ford, but I take exception to the way Feinstein has handled this entire issue. I think that might be a conversation for another day, but she is not bathed in glory by any way, shape, or form in this story because she essentially outed a woman who did not want to be outed. Christine Blasey Ford did not want to become a political football. And people need to realize that every time somebody speaks out about being victimized, it comes at a cost. And she is paying a very high price right now.
I was reminded of this the other night when I watched, and I'm almost certain it was CNN, a retrospective back on Anita Hill testifying mm-hmm. in the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings. And the comment was made, and I really had not processed this before, how much it set back the efforts to convince victims of sexual assault that it was okay to come forward. And it, and people said that Anita Hill's testimony and the fact that it was not that it was almost trivialized in some respects really set that movement back. And I almost wonder if we're watching the same thing unfold, that people who are victims of sexual assault, sexual harassment, are looking at what Ms. Ford is going through and saying, boy, that really makes me have second thoughts even further.
Yeah, you know, many brave women talk about coming forward publicly, but so many others are still hesitant to do so for those very reasons. Now, there is a deadline set for tomorrow, and while Ms. Ford's attorney is trying to control as much of the situation as possible for her client, which I absolutely get.
I agree.
There is no, I mean, in every communication that her attorney has had with the Senate Judiciary Committee, the door is still open. Like, it doesn't appear to me that Ms. Ford has closed it quite yet. Tomorrow, this time, we might be having a different conversation. But in the next 24 or so hours, I think that door is still open. I mean, but put yourself in her position just for a moment. And the scrutiny, the vulnerability. I mean, would you open up your most harbored private pain to a panel of unfamiliar people in front of an international television audience, subjecting yourself to photographers and reporters for this pervasive questioning about something that has bothered you that it didn't come up until 2012 with your therapist in marriage counseling with the man you love? I mean, do you really want to put that on display for the world? I think that if she does, in fact, testify, it would be privately.
And I've always thought all along that's the way it would probably be done. And even at this point, Pamela, her privacy has just been, it's evaporated. She's anywhere she goes right now, she's recognized because her picture's already been put out on television everywhere. And even if she testifies in private, the story goes public.
I mean, she is, in essence, right now, exposing her very being to the world. And it is reliving the trauma. And it is going to be played out in a 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a sexual abuse victim. I mean, I know these are allegations. I know that. And I know that we need to say they're allegations. And I'm not trying to convict Brett Kavanaugh prematurely. And he's not in a court of law. I get all of that. But I tend to believe sexual assault accusers first. Do people lie? Unfortunately, it does happen. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of women who have the strength and the courage to come forward are not lying. And when they do come forward, it comes at a tremendous cost. She has had death threats. Her family's had to leave their home. And so while the president keeps talking about how difficult this has been for Brett Kavanaugh, sure, I get that it's difficult. But he's not the only one that is struggling in this.
Look, who is on the Judiciary Committee in the United States Senate? Lawyers, people who deal with the law. I've thought all along since this story broke, let her testify, let Judge Kavanaugh respond. It's the old adage, if you don't have anything to hide, you get nothing to worry about. And let her give her testimony, and if she's way off, they'll recognize it.
I hope she finds the strength to testify, but I would not be surprised if she says it's not worth it.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Hey, are you surprised, though, by who the NFL has supposedly picked to perform at halftime? Oh, man. Internet blew up about this next. But what you don't know about the halftime show at the Super Bowl might surprise you. We're talking about it next here on KTAR News.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Who knew that Maroon 5 was as polarizing as political parties are nowadays? The news coming out yesterday by Variety. Now, Variety is reporting it, citing multiple sources, that this band that you're hearing right here, Maroon 5, has been picked to be the halftime act for the Super Bowl. And let the outrage ensue on Twitter, Jeff Munn.
First of all, I'm too old to really know who Maroon 5 is, but
really?
I've heard of them.
Come on.
I've heard of them, and my daughter would be the first to call the show and say, tell Dad that he's heard of Maroon 5. The game is in Atlanta, and the outrage is over why didn't you pick an act that was more associated with the city of Atlanta, the southern United States. Now, the other part of this is the NFL saying, we haven't picked anybody yet.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, the NFL is coming out and going, oh, yeah, you know what, it's kind of tradition to speculate who's going to be in the Super Bowl. We, halftime show, we haven't confirmed anything. Variety is the one that put it out there, again, citing multiple sources. So will they, won't they, I don't know. But I think it's funny. It's funny because people are outraged. Outraged, I say, because, yes, they want something a little bit more Atlanta-based, right? Where the Super Bowl is going to be hosted this year.
Right.
Something like Outkast, maybe. All right. T.I., Ludacris, Usher. My goodness, Usher, right? That would make sense to people.
Right.
But here's the deal, folks. It's called a business. And they do not choose the halftime show based upon location of where the game is going to be played. Did you know the acts that perform in the halftime show, they're not paid to be there? In fact, Katy Perry, you know this Katy Perry?
I got the eye of the tiger.
Yeah, the Katy Perry that performed right here in Glendale at the Cardinals Stadium in 2015. She did the halftime performance. She was talking to the Associated Press and confirmed that she was asked to pay but didn't pony up for the chance to perform at the gig. She said, I put my foot down very early in the courtship. I said, look, guys, here's where I draw the line in the sand. I want to be invited on my own merits and not with some fine print. It's been reported that acts have been asked to pay, but I haven't seen that anybody has actually done that. But the acts that do perform, they get a lot out of it. For instance, yeah, when you had this guy right here, Tom Petty, perform. His greatest hits album, the sales nearly tripled just a week after he performed. And then when this lady, Madonna, her gross rose 165% in 2012 after she performed. There's usually a concert that's going to drop and tickets are going to be sold the next day or an album. That's what this is about.
Didn't Justin Timberlake go out on a huge tour right after the Super Bowl in February?
Bravo. Yes, last year. Absolutely. That's exactly what happened.
Including coming here, if I'm not mistaken. Or has that happened yet?
What's that?
Justin Timberlake did a concert appearance.
Yeah, I believe he's already been here.
I think he's
already
been here. Yeah.
And I think he's coming back. Or there was some word that they were going to come back
that
here
wouldn't
in November.
Surprise
but
me either.
Was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. This lady, Beyonce, performed here in the Valley. But when she performed at the halftime show just a couple years ago, the next day, guess what? She started selling tickets to her concert. Because artists know that you are on the biggest stage, they are going to maximize it. So, unfortunately, many people don't realize this is a business decision. It's a business decision on the part of the Super Bowl and in the NFL, and it's a business decision on the part of the artist.
And it's also a very sensitive decision on the part of the NFL. If you remember back to Janet Jackson
and Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah. And for several years after that, the NFL went really cautious with their
vanilla.
Super Bowl entertainment.
They went so
vanilla. There was a year where Sir Paul McCartney did the halftime, and a lot of people were critical of that, saying, gee, you know, that's kind of old guy stuff. But it was mostly the NFL was just reacting to the outrage over Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake in Houston at Super Bowl 38.
Mm-hmm.
So this has always been kind of a really touchy subject, both from a business standpoint, from a critical reception standpoint, and it's on the largest television audience. So you got to keep it clean, too.
Yeah, you know what? Again, the outrage is pretty funny here. Like Poetic Genius tweeted this saying, Maroon 5 with all the artists from Atlanta that are 100 times better? Somebody on the Super Bowl entertainment booking staff needs to be relieved of all duties pronto. Well, Poetic Genius, again, it's a business decision. and you may not like it. What I would see happening or could potentially happening is some sort of mashup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maroon 5 comes out and does their thing, and Usher and Luda or T.I. or Outkast. I mean, Outkast is fantastic. You know, they come on the stage and you get that little bit of the, you know, Atlantic vibe. But other than that, I don't know if it's going to happen.
Let's not rule out the conspiracy theory either this regard. Sometimes I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL floated things out there as a trial balloon, and they may have told somebody, hey, run a story that we're considering Maroon 5 and see how people react.
But don't you think Maroon 5 would then be out there saying, hey, whoa, this isn't happening? Man. I mean, you got a lot of different players in this. All right, so Maroon 5 is extremely polarizing. I was talking about it with Jim Sharp on Arizona's Morning News, and he hates this band. And I'm like, I love me a little Adam Levine, right? Who does it? Well, you might not. What are your thoughts about this? Are you as outraged about the halftime show? Do you even care? Do you think, like, maybe the NFL, if it is, in fact, Maroon 5, messed it up a bit? We want to hear from you on the open mic line. 602-200-2733. 602-200-2733. We got a lot of issues with education here in Arizona. But now we got to deal with the shortage of drivers for buses. Yeah, we've got a teacher shortage. Now we got a bus driver shortage. Yeah, we're going to give you some perspective on this next here on KTAR News. And now it's all good.